You guys are so lucky. Sonus Quartet is ready to go. They're here live in the studio. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. This is Sonus Quartet.
Thank you.
Wow, did you guys just make that up right there on the spot like that? That's incredible.
A little something we came up with.
Wow, you guys are good. No, so do you jam out a lot like that? Wow, you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest, I'm so lucky, you're also lucky, to hear Sonas Quartet. That was amazing, guys. It was really...
Thanks.
I'm beaming.
Thanks for having us.
This is so cool. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourselves?
Okay, my name is Caroline. I play the violin.
My name's Neil. I also play the violin.
My name's Hanno, and I play the viola.
And I'm Vanessa. I play the cello.
Nice. So let's talk. I mean, what's on everybody's mind? Like, how do you make it as a quartet, as a string quartet?
Well, how do most people make it as a string quartet, what are we doing?
Well, I mean, the idea being, you guys are in a contemporary setting. You're adding something fresh to the idea of a quartet. What is the take behind Sonas?
Well, I think we should start with clarifying with what we kind of think a lot of string quartets do, and a lot of them are very classical, and you see them at weddings, and it's really pleasant music. But we think we can bring something a little more exciting and experimental, hopefully something that people will enjoy. So that's what we're going for.
Yeah, and I think we have classical roots. All of us were trained privately and went to college for music, and so our first love, I think, is classical music. But I think we all agree that the string quartet, sort of as a musical vehicle, has so much to offer beyond just classical music, that the sounds that you can achieve with a quartet is so, it's endless. So, and since our tastes in music are all wide-ranging, I think our goal is sort of to play both the classical first love music and, you know, to do sort of new inventive things with the quartet that people maybe haven't heard before.
Exactly. So how do you know to play with each other? How did the quartet form?
I think that's a process. It doesn't just kind of come together magically, because with a quartet, it's not just the playing of the people, but you've got to get
it's
along.
It's a marriage.
Yeah, and you got to work well, and people have to be, you know, professional. If you say you're going to rehearse at 11, people can't show up at 12. And so there's a lot of things.
You can't hate the people you're
in
the quartet.
Yeah, you can't hate them. You see them too much. So it's a process. It's taken a couple years to get this particular group of four. But Neil and Vanessa, you guys met first. I don't know if you want to...
Yeah, we sort of... Wasn't it at my senior recital?
Yeah, well, really, I guess what happened is I always wanted to play chamber music, never really wanted to be in an orchestra. I just never found it appealing as a violinist. And Vanessa and I were friends, and we also played together in the Debut Orchestra, which is like a young professional group in Los Angeles. And we were friends. I went to her senior recital at UCLA and was just blown away by the way she plays, and
I just remember you coming up to me afterwards and being like, "Let's start a quartet."
Yeah, I knew I wanted a quartet. It starts from the bottom up, as far as I'm concerned. And so, yeah, I just approached her and said, "I really want to play music with you." And that's pretty much how it started. And then we just filled in the gaps.
And we found Caroline because Neil and Caroline went to music school together.
We went to a conservatory together in Cleveland, Ohio. And I remember Neil calling me a week after I moved to LA. And he said, "We just had a divorce with our violinist. You want to come play with us?" It's the type of thing you try out. And I said, "Well, sure, let's play together, have fun." And we've just never stopped.
Yeah, we felt pretty fortunate, because I think when... we were in a position when we were looking for a new first violinist. Caroline was the person I was thinking of. She's just like, I went to school with her, and she is an incredible musician. And thought it was kind of a long shot, but she happened to live in Los Angeles. It was just, it just
and happened
fell
to have
into
nothing
place.
To do when I was here.
Yeah.
So I was,
yeah, well, and it's rare it that awesome. You find a violinist of her caliber who had like really not a whole lot going on at the moment.
Nothing. Let's just clarify. I had nothing to do.
And who we got along with musically, who wasn't like some kind of crazy classical violin diva, you know, who, I mean, she, you know, our personalities instantly clicked. And I think, you know, she enjoys playing other kinds of music as well, which is rare. Usually when someone is of her caliber player, they are, you know, soloing, playing classical concertos, and that's it. So,
and then we picked only classical.
And then we picked up Han at a bar. We found him at a bar,
and taught him how to play viola.
Yeah, we gave him a viola. No, we really did, actually. He was coming to hear a band that I play in every Monday at Molly Malone's, and And when we were looking for a new violist, none of us had ever heard Han play, which I can say now because it was such a leap of faith. We can say that now because clearly he's proven himself time and time again. But he was there that night when we were looking for a replacement violist for the first time. And it was like, well, we have a gig in a week. Yeah. Let's just give Han a shot. And, you know, if he's terrible, we won't play with him again. And at the first rehearsal, it was like, okay, well, he's not terrible.
Right.
And then he's stuck around ever since.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got
being there is always the most important part of getting any good gig, I found.
Indeed.
And it's hard because, you know, as freelance musicians in LA, you've got to, you know, make a living, and so there's got to be a level of commitment to the quartet, even though we're now, you know, starting to do all right for ourselves at first, especially. It's tough, and you have other commitments, so you've got to prioritize, and sometimes, you know, you got to find people that are willing to
get up at 6 in the morning to rehearse before a session or before teaching.
Or willing to turn down a job, even if it means a little extra money, because the quartet's a priority. And we're all really lucky because we're on the same page with that.
That's great. And that's really rare, too.
Yeah, it is. And it's also rare that we're all friends somehow.
Now, Han, I know you think you probably found these guys, right?
Yeah.
You were just sitting around and...
You know, FYI, I'm like 7 weeks old. So... Sonus-wise, so...
Oh,
totally new to the group, but just fit right in, and we're so lucky to have found a violist with such...
This group is by far the best group I've ever played with. I mean, I used to play with a professional string quartet before, and, you know...
Just hope they're not listening.
Yeah, you know who you are.
You hear a lot about rock star mentalities, and you brought up that, you know, it's, you guys work really well together. Tell me a little bit about chamber music mentalities and people that are easy to work with versus people that are difficult to work with. What are some of the people you kind of avoid?
That's easy.
How much time do you have?
Well, I think the thing with a quartet is that you don't have an outside coach coming in saying, this is how it could be better, or you're playing out of tune. It's like we have to do that for ourselves. And so you have to be able to look someone in the eye and say, I don't think that sounded very good. Can you try it this way?
Or, and not get offended.
Exactly. So you've got to be really constructive, and you've got to also be willing to, you know, hear this from your peers and your colleagues that, you know, that they have things that you could do better. And I think we all just get along really well. Like, we don't have any conflicts. We're so lucky that we can just be really hard on each other. And I mean, it's necessary. The only way you're going to get better is if everyone says exactly what they think, but you have to say it nicely because these are your friends.
Also, I think there's a lot of, you know, that kind of energy that we have when we play. It's what I like to call artistic flirting.
That's nice. That's very nice.
Caroline would occasionally throw me, like, something, like, out of the blue and be like, oh, that's nice. Well, check this out. And it's a lot of fun. That's what keeps it also spontaneous, you know.
In performance, you got to try new things and have a good time, be willing to be open, and have everyone go along. Exactly. Trust that everyone will just go with it, and rather than just saying, oh, we're going to practice it one way and that's the way we're going to play it every time.
Yeah, well, I actually just recently saw you guys play live at Molly Malone's, and I noticed that very thing, that it was a very lively performance. It was as entertaining as, you know, one would expect from a rock band or a hip-hop act or something like that, you know? And so it was really interesting because it brought something special to the music. So well, tell me a little bit about Molly Malone's and what you guys do there on a regular basis.
Well, I guess Molly Malone's, for us, started because I play with a singer-songwriter named Justin Clayton, and he's had a residency there for about a year now. And so I've been playing there every Monday in his band, because of that relationship, we were able to get in there we've been so fortunate, thanks to JT, the booker, for allowing us to sort of use it as an experimental, safe testing ground. But because of me being there every week anyways, it was sort of easy for us to just take the opening spot whenever we wanted it, really, and it's been a great place for us to play, sometimes to small crowds, sometimes to large crowds, but always to an audience of people who are really open to whatever we do. And it's been really helpful because when we first started playing there, we were playing with pickups on our instruments that now when we listen back, the sound quality was horrendous. And it took a while to figure out the repertoire, too. We started off thinking that classical music in a venue like that would be something that we'd kind of have to slip in there when they were not looking, you know, and sort of pad it with Led Zeppelin covers and sort of more accessible things that we also enjoy playing. But we sort of figured that there might be some things that were a bit esoteric for the average Molly Malone's crowd to understand. And then as we went on, we sort of found that what people were responding to the most after the shows were, you know, God, that Shostakovich was my favorite. I've never heard anything like it. And we were blown away. So now I think we pretty much feel safe in just choosing programs that we like, whether it's classical or non-classical. We just collaborated with a beatboxer doing a Eurythmics cover, and then on the same program as Shostakovich Eighth String Quartet. And so it's been a really fantastic sort of home base for us to try out things and see what people respond to, and also to tweak our own setups. We're now using clip-on mics that have changed everything for us in terms of sound. And so, yeah, it's been a good thing.
Yeah, and I think it's really important for us to reach out to an audience that won't ever hear a string quartet.
Exactly.
And is that a difficult thing, trying to get people just to come in? Like, they hear quartet and they go, oh, it's classical, it's boring. And how do you get them in to see you?
Well, I think it's something that builds over time.
I think there's, there's a word of mouth.
We've been persistent with it, and hopefully it'll keep growing.
Yeah, well, there's quite a few people at Molly's.
Yeah, there was such a small crowd of people that actually buy tickets to go hear string quartets, just in general. So I think it's been really rewarding for us to bring our music to a crowd of people that would probably never buy a ticket to go hear a string quartet play at the Disney Hall, and a lot of them have come up to me afterwards and they don't know what my instrument, the cello, is. They've, what's that called? And they've never heard a string quartet in their life, and yet they sit through an entire...
That guitar is huge.
Yeah, exactly. Is that a body in that case? But they sit through an entire string quartet, classical, and they love it. And I think for us, we sort of all realize that, Shostakovich and Led Zeppelin are sort of the same, like it's coming from the same place, and so I think it's been really rewarding to sort of bring that to an audience and have them respond in the same way, and they're the Shostakovich kind of rocks a little bit.
And like you were saying, saying that there's like a rock star aspect to maybe what we're doing. I don't know if you said that, but we like to we like to think there's a tiny bit of that. I think in general people think of classical music and classical string quartets as being this kind of distanced art, this kind of nose in the air, very calm, very elegant. And I think what we're trying to do is play music that we feel really passionate about and bring that, in terms of our repertoire choices and on
taking the class out of classical.
Yeah. And then bring that on the stage, too, and show that we're excited about it. We don't sit there and all in our tuxedos. We get up barefoot in jeans and whatever we happen to be wearing, and we're standing up, except for Vanessa, of course, with the cello.
We're working on that. Yeah. We're going to get her a platform.
Yeah, as nice. It should be.
But we think, there's a certain kind of thing you can go after. If you choose pieces that you love and you don't feel burdened by, we have to do certain classical repertoire, it kind of opens your mind, and people really respond to it. So it's been... it's been good.
Tell me about the piece that you just played before we go into another piece.
Sure. Well, this is actually a piece called Passacaglia, based on a theme by a very classical composer, Handel. And then it was kind of written out in a bunch of variations by another guy, Halvorsen. And it was originally written for violin and cello, but we thought it was kind of cool and had some neat variations, and we can kind of tweak it to be however long we want since it's variations, and so we added in a couple other parts, just arranged it ourselves. That's one thing, too. Even with the classical pieces, we tend to arrange them ourselves and do our own cuts and change the parts around to stuff that we like a little better. So that's what we did with this one. We made it into a string quartet piece.
Well, it was fantastic. What do you have for us next?
Well, next, actually, this is kind of indicative of what we tend to do with things. We've been playing Shostakovich's Eighth String Quartet, which we're all, I think, madly in love with, which is such an incredible piece. But we've tried to find new ways of looking at it and, segues between unexpected pieces that, you would never expect to hear one thing following another. So this is actually the third movement of Shostakovich's Eighth String Quartet, with a little segue into George Harrison's Within You, Without You.
Nice. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Sonus Quartet. If you want to instant message us, the AOL instant messenger handle is Kill Radio Station. Thanks for listening. Check this out.
Thank you.
And that's what feedback sounds like, if you're curious. Had the monitors up so you guys could hear the percussion. Tell me a little bit about the percussion in that piece and what we were just listening to.
I guess everything you heard in that percussion part was either myself or Vanessa hitting our instruments into a microphone, and then I took that home and made it into a tabla part. So hopefully you couldn't even really tell that it was us. It's supposed to sound like a very ethnic percussive instrument of some kind.
And we were playing that pre-recorded from an iPod. You guys were playing over it.
Yeah.
Tell me about this idea of using either manipulating your own instruments to create a different sound, or using other instruments incorporating into the Sonus Quartet to make it something more than a quartet.
Well, I think it's been part of our whole experimental nature as a quartet. We try many things. And we had the concept of, you know, at one point, we're still working on an album right now. We're trying to decide what that's going to be. But what this idea was just brainstorming about ideas for our album. Like, maybe we could, you know, have this thick album with percussion, but what if we do all the percussion ourselves? But I think I don't know. We will see what makes the album as far as that goes. It was just honestly just an idea and carried out for one arrangement, but it won't be our specific sound because I think we are all over the place with what we want to do. So we're not going to do one gimmicky thing as what we do. It'll be part of what we do.
Well, and the cool thing about that With Any Without You was recently we got to actually play it for the concert for Bangladesh Revisited, which was a documentary release party celebrating the release of the documentary about the concert for Bangladesh and the concert for George. And we actually got to play it. We played with Ringo that night, but he was in the audience when we opened the show with that while all the guests came out from the screening into the party, and actually got to play with Danny Harrison, George's son, and Billy Preston and the whole, you know, crew, Klaus Vormann and Jim Keltner, and it was amazing to, you know, be playing With In You Without You and to look into the audience and there's Ringo like giving you the thumbs up. So that was a pretty special experience.
Tell me about your best and worst experiences playing live.
Well, yeah, there's different aspects of it. It's like if the performance goes well, that's one thing. But if, you know, like we said, we used to play on pickups and that sound was frustrating because it sounded so processed. And one thing about the string quartet is that you have these four beautiful, you know, acoustic instruments and the way that their sound blends. So that was kind of frustrating because we didn't get the sound that we wanted, yet we knew we wanted amplification, especially kind of in the venues that we've been playing, we thought it would translate well. So I don't know. I think that some of the worst was not even so much stuff that happened, but just kind of trying to figure out the sound for me. I don't know.
And do you think the best was the NAMM show?
Yeah, I
think. Yeah, just because it was unexpected.
Yeah, we had been hired as a string quartet to play for the Yamaha Winter NAMM concert, which was featuring Sarah McLachlan and Katie Lang and Natalie Cole and Gavin DeGraw, Brian Wilson. It was a crazy Al Jarreau, crazy lineup of artists, and we were thrilled to be included. They sort of had a house band, and they wanted to have a string quartet option with the house band because some of the artists had string quartet arrangements that went with the songs. So of course, you know, we show up and it turns out that there's room for us to open, actually with the last piece that we're going to play for you today, there was room for us to open the show with it, which was really unexpected. And had we known, we would have rehearsed it a bit more in the prior days, but we got there and found
and
out that...
brought cooler outfits.
Yeah, I brought cooler outfits. But we ended up opening for Katie Lang and Sarah McLachlan, and, you know, two of our favorite artists, and playing in front of 2,000 people.
Wow.
And playing a piece that... the next piece that we're going to do, I'll let Caroline talk about it before we actually play it, but it's, you know, it's a virtuosic violin classical piece, and to play to an audience of people who had come to hear that lineup of artists and to have them basically on their feet for classical music was pretty astounding. So I would say that has to be one of the best.
Kind of made us think, wow, I think we can do this.
Yeah,
and bring
this might actually work.
I think they might be into it. No way.
People have always told us, like, oh, you're going to have a singer, or, you know, do any of you sing, you know, or what's your idea?
You guys
this
have
is never
all girls
work.
So that you can, yeah, play exactly. The sex appeal.
Yeah, that was sort of like a little mini Sonus coup at that moment, knowing that we had managed to pull that off with
nice.
A classical piece.
Here's a question for each of you individually. What is something that performers do with your instrument that you just think is bad? You know, for example, I had a person playing viola here last week. You know Eric from playing with George Sarah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was here with his band XUK, and he was saying one of the things that really annoys him is how when people play viola, they sometimes try to play it like a saxophone. Over improvisation would be an example of something. I don't know. Does every performer have their thing? Like, you know, I hate it when someone with a violin does this or does that. Or is it really open?
I have something that I hate. I'm not a violinist, but I have a pet peeve. Oh, I don't know if it's going to be rude. It's no offense to any groups out there that do it, but I have a thing. Well, I'm going to contradict myself because we just did this in the last piece. But in general, I have a thing with violins trying to play vocal melodies. I think it does not work at all, and it ends up sounding really stiff and straitjacketed most of the time. So, And I hate it when cellists play with no balls. That's my cello pet peeve. It's such a big instrument, and it's got so much power, and when people pansy around it, it just pisses me off.
Yeah,
I'm thinking, where are the balls on the cello? I'm not too familiar with the instrument.
You got to search.
No, I don't know. I think I just love hearing anyone play their instrument and just take risks. And mm-hmm. So when people just play it really safe and stay clean, that's fine. I wouldn't say it bugs me, but I'm left kind of unmoved and unexcited about the performance. So anytime someone takes risks, even if it totally bombs, that's all right. But, you know, just got to go for it. Like in the Olympics. Should we mention the Olympics? How fun is that?
Yeah, I think what gets me is when the musical meaning is neglected. When a performer is only thinking about the technique and basically their ego, you know, trying to impress everybody, but it's not about saying something to the audience. It's about, look at me, I'm great.
And then it ceases to be music.
It is just like figure skating, too. You know, where's the passion? Yes, you landed all your jumps, but wait, that doesn't mean anything. What's the point?
Right.
To win the gold, I guess, right? But anyway.
I was going to say, too, one little thing that just occurred to me is that I think that it's, as a group, it's like, or as any type of performer, it's always cool when you see people giving it their all, even in small venues. It's like one thing to see someone do a great job in a huge concert, but then if you see them playing somewhere smaller, sometimes you feel like people just slack because they think, oh, well, no one's important is here, and I've already sold a bunch of albums, so I can just kind of like be unprepared and just kind of, you know, just fly by my reputation and by stuff like that. And so I think it's... On the other hand, I love seeing when people just, you know, do well in all the performances and act like everyone is important, because I think it's like a tribute to the audience and just to the music that you're playing. And I don't know. So I think hopefully we try to do that, give our all into every performance, no matter how big or small.
Yeah. Contrary to what the other violist that came in last week, I think that as instrumentalists, we should try to explore, you know, sounds, you know, of the entire spectrum, and try to use that as our artistic palette. Mm-hmm. You know, paint pictures. I agree with the rest of the group that it's only when people don't put their conscience and mind and heart into the colors that they're using. And it becomes really, really bad for me. Like, I just,
right.
Okay, pink. why pink, you know?
So I guess improvisation is well and good, but even in that, it needs to have a purpose.
Right.
It's probably what he was getting at as well, is that it needs to have music behind it and not just be, you know.
Right, not just because you did this because you heard it on the CD, but you want to do it because you really, really feel strongly about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's what carries. I mean, one of the most successful things that I think we've done so far is, you know, it's really easy for people to stay quiet and be attentive to what you're doing if you're playing, per se, in Disney Hall. But to make people in Molly Malone's, when they have, like, you know, pretty waitresses and, like, booze in front of them, mm-hmm. like, be quiet and attentive.
And they can easily go into the other part of the bar and where it's loud and different music.
Yeah, but they stay there, and they sit through the whole thing, and they love it. So I think that's what makes us, I think.
What does Sonus mean?
Ooh, that's a good question. That kind of all ties in. Sonus actually means sound in Old English, and... God, naming a string quartet is really hard. I'm sure any band can relate, or parent trying to name a child. It's something you're going to have to live with for a long time. So we went down a whole list of possible names, and Sonus just kept coming back because we felt it was sort of the broadest definition of what it is that we do, to make sound, and that it doesn't pigeonhole us into only, you know, this genre or that genre. Doesn't sound, you know, like it's trying to be some gritty rock name, but it also doesn't sound like some snobbish classical, you know, whatever. So we thought it was sort of a broad term, and liked it for that reason.
Was there anything that didn't last on the list very long?
Well, there was Avanti, but then we found out it was a lambskin condom brand or something.
right.
Or whatever it is. Yeah. One quick Google online and we were like, oh, maybe not. Maybe
it was
not.
Pretty funny. Google,
although the endorsements
with names. Because you Google it and you find red flags immediately.
Yes.
You mentioned briefly that you're putting together an album. When is that going to be available? What's going to be on it? All that stuff.
We're working on it right now. We've I think decided on a lineup of repertoire, and are going to be working on it over kind of the late spring and the summer, and we'll see how it goes, and hopefully it'll come out soon. We'll have the information on our website, I think.
Which is
www.sonusquartet.com. So
we'll just wanted to say something real quick that everything on our first album would be original Sonus arrangements done by a member of the quartet. Mostly Carolyn.
No. We all work on them. We all put our heads together to see kind of what works and what we like. And it's always dynamic. You know, we do an arrangement, but then we change it and we suggest things and we cut things out and we add things. And it's kind of neat. You know, you're not stuck doing it one way.
Or like this next piece that we're going to play, actually. It's sort of the idea of taking works that are already in the classical repertoire but adapting them for a string quartet, and sort of taking all of the colors that an orchestra can get and that a soloist can get, and trying to achieve all of that with just the four players, and hopefully it works. But it's opened up a big door for us to be able to play just music that we like, and if we have to adapt it for four string instruments, then so be it, you know.
Nice. Well, do you want to go into the next song then?
Sure.
You guys ready?
Caroline did this arrangement. You want to say something about it?
Yeah, this is actually a piece that I knew as a violinist. I played it. It's called Zugrunerweisen, which means gypsy airs, and it's written by a Spanish composer. Anyway, it's just this fun gypsy tune that I thought just had a lot of freedom, and I thought it translated well to string quartet because it's kind of in these different sections, and so we each take it and get to kind of do our own thing with it. And it's so rare that you hear string quartets do virtuosic passages as opposed to just kind of nice, pleasant, again, you know, wedding music or something. So it was really fun, and I brought the idea to the group, and everyone jumped on it, and because we all love a challenge and love playing things that are just kind of hard on sleeve and fun and sexy, and so that's what this last one is. It's a gypsy piece.
Well, thanks for sharing it with us. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Sonus Quartet. Check it out.
Thank you.
the things that I notice in every piece that you guys have played is that it changes so dramatically as it progresses. It's never the same thing. And a lot of music, you can start to predict what's going to happen. Like, I always think about like images in my head, like what this song would sound like if it were in the soundtrack to a film, for example. And a lot of music is like, oh, this song would be perfect in the scene where she's running from the bad guy, or, you know, the scene where they have their first kiss. But with your music, is, you know, there's this whole film, a beginning, a middle, and an end, and there's action, and there's romance, and comedy. That's a good thing.
Well, so, thanks.
Yeah.
I think some of the classical music, yeah, offers a lot like that, a lot of different moods and scenes and stuff. It's not just exactly like you said, not just one feel.
How does the writing process for something like this start when you're doing an original piece? Does it start with just like one little loop in your head, or
This is an original. This is based on a piece, and then we just did our own arrangement. So it's originally for violin and orchestra, and we, you know, did it for string quartet, and it's a process, and there's some thought that goes into it, but it's fun, and we talk about it.
Okay. So my final question for you then is, what is success? What does success mean for Sonus Quartet, for you as individual performers, as a group? How do you know when you've achieved your goal, or is it an ever-changing thing?
Oh gosh, I think it's always ever-changing.
I think success is freedom, you know, being able to play what we want to play and to have it be well-received and, you know...
Freedom from a day job.
Freedom from a day job. Yes. I think freedom to play the music that we believe in, and, you know, to not have to do certain programs to satisfy, you know, a concert series that has a certain theme, or, you know, to have to do a certain kind of music in a club and then another kind of music in a concert hall. I think just to be able to sort of be a bit rebellious and play what music we want to play, you know, and not have to bend because of any preset standards that might already exist.
And I think also to stay like balanced musicians, like to play things that both speak to us musically, but then to also play things that are fun. And also another thing, you know, is maybe to do outreach and reach out to kids and do things that we feel will continue kind of passion for music and get kids excited, so that we don't just, you know, stay excited about it and then someday die. But hopefully we inspire, you know, not only, you know, audience members to like it, but, you know, kids to go out and practice and to be the next generation. And so, I don't know, kind of to stay balanced and kind of, you know, just as a person, as a musician.
Yeah, I think success, it also has a lot to do with what the audience gets out of it. I mean, that's just so important, and it's so fulfilling when you feel like what you've done musically communicates something with anyone. That's success, as I see it, is a, you know, a performance that works for both you and the audience.
I remember one of my teachers at Cleveland, who is this very kind of imposing figure. I had to wear, you know, a dress to lessons, and he wore a suit every day, and it was terribly, I don't know, scary. But in any case, one day he asked me at a lesson, he said, "Caroline, what business are you in?" And I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "What do you mean, like in music?" He said, "Yeah, what business is music?" And I said, "Entertainment." And he said, "No, communication. Remember that." And so I think that if we can communicate well, that maybe that's part of success too.
Well, that's a perfect way to end. Perfect episode of Is Good with John Hirschfield on KillRadio.org. My guest has been Sonus Quartet. Thank you all so much for coming
thanks
in.
So thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Where can people see you next?
We're actually playing this coming Monday. Is it the 20th?
February 20th.
February 20th at Molly Malone's, starting at 7:45.
Where's Molly Malone's?
Molly Malone's is on Fairfax between 5th and 6th, and all of the information is up on our website, sonusquartet.com. We have a MySpace page as well, so myspace.com/sonusquartet. It's the necessary evil these days. But all of the information for our upcoming shows are posted there. Our next one is this coming Monday.
You've been listening to Is Good on KillRadio.org.